Covered in Glory is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook, the greatest sports betting app of all time. Download it, must be 21 years or older. Welcome back to Covered in Glory, where I had an absolutely horrific Saturday last week, Brett, largely thanks to you kicking my tail in the five-pint pickoff, thanks to Chelsea absolutely crapping the bed against Brighton. How good did you feel on Saturday morning?
I don't feel good, man, because I didn't want to have it be against your team. I just made the bet. I thought it was the best bet. It didn't bring me any extra pleasure. I don't want to root against you. You're my guy. But I am glad that I won. I'm a competitor, so I'm glad that I won. But I never want to like rub salt in your wound.
How are you going to expect our audience to listen to any picks you make when you lie so easily? I know that felt good. I know that you were doing an extra gleeful dance watching them blow up and that all your picks came in, Leeds, Brighton, everybody else. Come on, just be truthful. You don't got to blow smoke up my tail. I'm a big boy.
No, honestly, the most exciting thing for me was that Leeds match was fantastic. And I think I'm fully converted to just leaving Everton. I think I'm going to send the divorce papers over. it was a really fun match. I watched that from start to finish. That kind of drowned out any like possible enjoyment I got from winning the Brighton bet against you, because that match was just, A, it was really fun. B, the bet hit. And then just the fact that, you know, an American coach who's been a little bit, you know, on the hot seat, you know, gave himself a little bit of breathing room. That was really fun.
Well, it was only my Saturday that was bad, Brett, because on Sunday I experienced one of the great joys that anybody can have in life. I got a new puppy. 8-week-old awesome. Dog came home on Sunday, washed all the stink of Saturday away, and I am in love, even though I have not slept at all. So this is going to be a particularly loopy episode of Covered in Glory. But I had to do some research before I got the dog, and being the footy fan that I am, I thought it'd be appropriate that I try to get a dog that aligns with the kind of my love of the beautiful game. So did a bunch of research into some really rare breeds, and here's what I was thinking about getting. I found this one dog that it accepts no training. It only wants to play with you under exactly his own conditions. It's known as a Ronaldoodle. I was really close. It was this really great dog. Loved it. Had a lot of potential. But then I found out it was raised by Roy Hodgson and became an English Sucker Spaniel. And then finally, there's this dog that I don't understand why they advertise it this way. You pay several thousand dollars for it, and it seems really exciting, but it has to go back to the shelter almost immediately. It's known as a Lukaku.
Is that like the dad jokes and puppy soccer names?
And yes, Brett, the 5 minutes I spent last night writing dog-based soccer puns were the best part of my day. Thank you for asking.
Believe me, I have seen books of dad jokes, and this would be better than all of them combined. So,
well, I did text you last night that I was going to bring up the dog today. Do you have any good soccer-based names that we should be considering?
I mean, the problem is like your personal hero, your Lord and Savior is Connor, and that is such a boring dog name, and you can't even use the last name with it. I don't know, man. I feel like it has to be a riff off like one of your favorite players' names or like a favorite player's moment. But like, what are you going to call him? Pooley, yeah, it's a golden noodle. You can't call him Pooley.
You have nothing at all. We did consider Chelsea. We did consider that for
Is it a male or a female?
It's a female dog.
It's a female dog.
Yeah. So we did consider Chelsea. But we didn't go with that. I also thought about Conte because it's part retriever. And so just going and winning balls back over and over again would be very appropriate for one of the greatest we've seen in that in the sport in our lifetime. And I lost the argument, Brett. I lost the argument. My wife is far more persuasive than I am. There's no way I can win it without going the Tom Brady Giselle route, because I really wanted to call her Didier Drogba. But Didier Drogba did not win.
That would be epic. That would be epic.
Yeah. So anyway, her name is Virginia. We call her Gigi because the only thing more dear to my heart than Chelsea is my home state, my homeland, and my alma mater. So that's what we ended up going with. Gigi, the golden year
dog, bud. That is legendary. I will, if I ever meet that dog, I will refuse to call it Virginia and it will be Diddy dog, bud. 100%. I will not acknowledge that name.
American dream. all right, so there's no way in my personal life next weekend is going to be as good as last weekend, but I think in the Premier League slate, we are in for a doozy. We have some real high-profile matchups, and as a result, we only have four games to cover here today, so we're probably going to get you out of here a little bit sooner. You ready to rock, Brett?
Let's do it.
All right, first, we have the premier matchup of the weekend, in my opinion, which is Tottenham versus Liverpool. Third, Tottenham is third at 26 points. Liverpool is ninth at 16 points. This game is Sunday at 11:30 a.m. At Caesars, Liverpool is plus 113. The Spurs are plus 215. The draw is plus 265. Poole minus half a goal is plus 110. And the Spurs are minus 140. So, Brett, let me just start out with this question for you. Is it disrespectful for Spurs to be significant underdogs at home to a side they are 10 points up on in the table?
No, not at all. I mean, Son broke his face in the Champions League midweek. Lucas Moura is now, I think, their only other healthy attacker other than Harry Kane. Conte has already only seemed to trust about like 15 guys on his roster, and most of them are wingbacks and defenders. Perisic looks washed. So I think we're going to have to start talking about how far outside of the top six, not whether or not they're going to be in the top four. And Liverpool is going to do this. We've seen this before. They are inconsistent. We have seen the Nottingham Forest type games that they are capable of. I think they're going to continue to have those, but they beat Napoli. They beat Ajax. They've had good wins. They beat City. Like, they are still good. They are still a top four team to me. I think it's just going to be at a different level. And this is what the fun of the soccer season is. Like, use your thing to get people to love soccer here. Like, you play the long game in the Premier League, right? Like, it's not just 10 matches. It's the entire slate and where teams up at the end of match week 38. Like, that's what matters. And I think from this point forward, I don't know if it's just me, I have way more faith in Liverpool than I do in Spurs.
Yeah. Well, I think in a lot of ways, Brett, it's time to find out if Conte can be more than just a system manager, no matter how good that system is and how effective it's been. What can he conjure up if he has to stare down Liverpool without Kulusevski, without Richarlison, and without Son? Can he get the defense organized so well to keep Poole out of the net? I kind of expect him to park a Coliseum-sized bus in this match, but even then, can he get it done? I'm not confident that he can.
Well, they did roll out that one midfield with Basuma in it, and then they gave up like three goals that match. So, there's like big systemic problems here, and I think you're right. Like, Conte has had his thing; it's always been that 3-5-2. I think he's played a little bit of a 4-4-2 at certain points way back, but like, he needs to conjure something up out of these mismatched peaches that he has left. Otherwise, the bleeding is going to continue to pour out.
Yeah. And I just don't think he's crazy enough to play an open game with them. So when he's this undermanned, like, what is his changeup? What's his next pitch? I mean, we know the fastball is excellent, but he's got to throw something else here. And then, you know, in the other manager box, these Klopp resigning questions are just like so freaking crazy to me.
I don't understand that.
He won the Champions League. He took them to two other finals. He won Liverpool their freaking first Premier League. He's routinely recognized as one of the best managers in the world. He's in his prime and he just signed a contract extension. And he's still having to ask questions after a couple of bad games about if it's time for him to leave. Like, what else do you want the guy to do? I guess I kind of love the chaos that this embodies, and it's the reason I gravitate to the sport is for this level of drama, but this is just absolutely wild. But then, you know, you take it out of the manager box and you keep saying that they're a top four team and that, you know, you have confidence in them to come back. I do want to dig into that slightly because this is our match of the week and we only have four, so let's dig in for a second. On the pitch, it turns out that Thiago isn't a magic elixir. We've kind of looked at him that way. It was his absence that kept them from clicking on all cylinders. Once he came back, they'd be fine. Twice now he's come back. Twice now he hasn't been fine. They still have significant issues. Fundamentally, Brett, I'm giving you your wet dream. I'm asking you to nerd out. I'm not going to interrupt. Fundamentally, from a like nerd point of view, what do you think is broken right now at Liverpool?
It's a lot of things. I think they thought this is the type of midfield that would be able to still accomplish the same protection that it did for their really good fullbacks. And I think you're seeing a gradual demise in a lot of key areas. Center backs have been hurt. Van Dijk hasn't been as good. We've seen a lot of Joe Gomez is really promising, got wrecked with injuries. He has been at fault for at least a few very high profile goals. The midfield has seen a lot of James Milner, It's not good. On top of the fact that Naby Keita has been out, Curtis Jones has been out. Not that Curtis Jones is like some talk about magic elixir. It's not Curtis Jones. I also think that there is the kind of stalwart, the unheralded stalwart of that of Liverpool's ability to just shut down matches was Fabinho. He has really not looked good. And that's the big thing. It was the combination of Fabinho and Thiago that really made Liverpool like the shutdown corner of soccer teams, right? And if Fabinho's not as good, the center back issues, Robertson has had a ton of miles. And like the thing about Robertson's game as a left back is like he's a runner. Like we think of left backs as like, you know, the Trent Alexander-Arnold like whipping balls into the box, like being this kind of playmaker. Robertson's thing on the other side was making the gut busting runs down the touchline to get into advanced positions, to get into dangerous areas and cut the ball back. So, and they have played a ton of matches. He played a ton of matches in World Cup qualifying for Scotland, and he is kind of washed, and Tsimikas just isn't like that good as a left back. I mean, I'm sorry, fellow Greek person, but he's not. So we're just seeing this like slow kind of degrading across multiple fronts all at the same time. And I think that's where the issue lies.
Yeah, I mean, they've done an excellent job of refreshing their attack. Like they just keep, you know, buying, you know, excellent attackers who can rotate in, and it's great now. Since they had injuries that they're still able to run out, you know, Nunez, Firmino, Salah, even though they're missing two high profile guys, but they have not done as good a job of refreshing the other areas of the field. Cause I just don't think they foresaw such a precipitous drop off, right? Like, yes, Fabinho was starting to like show like light signs, but you don't think he goes from like zero to washed overnight. And like Van Dijk, even more so. Van Dijk, I'm not saying is washed, but he certainly isn't the monolith that he was a few years ago. And they haven't done as great a job of refreshing those aspects of the pitch. And so I guess that's where we're seeing creaks.
Right. And the big soccer rumor, right, is Bellingham ending up at Liverpool, right? And so this was going to be the gap year. And they thought probably that they had enough to be able to get by, to bridge the gap between when Bellingham would hopefully wind up on their roster. And it just hasn't worked out that way. And I think you brought up a great point about the attack too. Like the attack has been good. Like Nunez has kind of gotten raked over the coals a little bit, but his production's been fine. They're still creating tons of chances. The crazy part is like in the loss against Forest is the amount of chances that they gave up. That's the thing that's been surprising with them this year is they've lost that defensive edge. And I think that just comes back down to the way that they're structured. You've had your Trent Alexander-Arnold, Russell Westbrook diatribe here, but the way that they had to be structured was they needed to protect their fullbacks, and their midfield doesn't do that anymore. Fabinho isn't doing that. Thiago's in and out of the lineup. James Milner sure shit ain't going to be able to protect their fullbacks. So, you know, it's just going to be one of those things where they're in a weird stretch. Klopp has done a fine job of continuing to move things around. I mean, he switched to a freaking 4-4-2. We talk about Conte not being adaptable like that. Like Klopp switched to a straight up 4-4-2 against Manchester City to get him a win. So I have faith in them. I know it seems like a slap in the face of Spurs, but it's part of the reason why I would take Liverpool straight up money line in this match. And it's part of the reason why I would take Liverpool to win and both teams to score, because I don't trust either of these teams defensively anymore, which is a weird thing to say about a Conte team and a Liverpool club.
Well, that second part's really interesting. I mean, I'm with you on the first part. And by the way, thanks for bringing up Alexander Arnold. It gives me a chance to talk about how Aaronson absolutely roasted him in that game for Leeds. And so, like, you've accused me of being anti-American in the past for not rooting for Leeds, but watching a fellow countryman just destroy that dude that I've been so critical of was super fun. So looking forward to seeing Aaronson, what he can do on the national stage. But I'm with you on the game. And it's not even about Liverpool. Like, they still have their problems in midfield. They still have their problems in defense. But I'm just flat out fading the Spurs. Like that ember I had in my heart for Conte and for Spurs, who I said was the second best team coming into the year, like it's burnt out. And they have to relight it. They have to prove it to me. They have to find some way back to re-win my confidence because I've been burned on them, and I'm not going to be burned again in this game. So I'm just fading them. I just don't see how they can win with the number of injuries, and I'm not convinced that Conte can pull off a 0-0 draw. You clearly aren't either because you think both teams are going to score. And they're going to concede so much possession to Liverpool. They're just not good enough to keep them out of the net entirely, given the number of ways Liverpool still has to score. They still have, you know, enough quality to do so. So I'm going to take Poole to plus money. And then I do see the second part of what you said slightly differently. It's not clear to me that Tottenham has a path to score in this game. But I'm not going to take them not to score the entire game. I am absolutely going to take them to not score in the first half, which is minus 135. I do expect them to come out and park the bus. I don't expect a lot of aggression. I expect them to concede a ton of possession. And there's always a chance that there's some like incredibly random penalty or Gomez passes back to Tottenham for a tap in like he did against Leeds or anything like that. But Spurs are not fast starters. The bus is going to be parked. And I love this number because not only do I have this game script on my side to 135 to come in, did you know the Spurs have not scored in the first half of their last six matches? So given the last six times they haven't done it, and this time I don't even think they're going to try to do it. I can't believe this isn't like minus 250 and I'm getting it basically at twice the value I should.
Yeah. And let's just like backtrack just to the midweek too. Obviously losing Son was a huge deal, but Marseille is not a good team. And Spurs at one point during the Champions League matches were eliminated from the knockout rounds. Like they created next to nothing in a match they had to get points from to advance. They did score two goals, but it was on 0.6 XG. Like they could have been eliminated. Like this is, it's way worse than it's looking, I think, on the surface.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
but that said, I have faith that Lucas Moura is going to roast Trent Alexander-Arnold.
Amen yes. to that. It's just a matter of who he's across from because he's getting roasted no matter who it is. All right. We think we hit that game pretty well. Let's take a break and we'll come back to my deplorable Chelsea team.
Your first bet with Caesars Sportsbook and Casino. It's on Caesars up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code CZRFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet. That first bet also gives you 1,000 tier credits and 1,000 reward credits, putting you closer to the types of perks only Caesars can offer. Free stays, game tickets, experiences, and more.
You must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ontario, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, and Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Ohio, and Utah, and other states where prohibited. Yes, you have to know when to stop before you start. If you have a gambling problem in Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Virginia, West Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or if you know someone who has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in Maryland, visit MarylandGamblingMDGamblingHelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY. That's 467-369. Or text CONNEX to 247-247. Tennessee, call or text Tennessee Redline, 1-800-889-9789.
All right, we are back and headed over to Stamford Bridge. Chelsea, sixth at 21 points versus Arsenal, first at 31 points. This game is Sunday at 7 a.m. It's another banger for the weekend. We get two top six clashes in the same weekend. How lucky are we? Chelsea is plus 150. Arsenal is plus 180. The draw is plus 225. Chelsea minus half a goal is plus 145. And Caesars has Arsenal at minus 185. All right, Brett. For once, I didn't take any notes on this game, so let's just have a little chat. Let's have a chat about it. Chelsea let me down big time last week and now are officially in injury crisis. They've had Chilwell limp off midweek. He might be done. Heck, it might even be for the season. But not only is it a blow to England, I think it's going to be a blow from Chelsea when the restart happens. And that goes on top of all the other defensive injuries that they have right now, Fofana, James, etc. They have to play Arsenal, City, and Newcastle in the next week. And the World Cup, in my mind, cannot get here soon enough so that national team managers can injure a bunch of other teams' players and hopefully level the playing team playing field for the Blues. So based on my pessimism up front, you could probably tell which way I'm leaning in the game. But let's hear your thoughts first, and then I'll add on.
Well, I'm going to flip this around to you, and I'm going to ask you a question. Besides Jorginho, and this is saying this with – we have a shared love of Kovacic, right? Kova is very well respected in this on this podcast. But besides Jorginho, do they have any midfielders – that you trust doing any defensive things anymore?
Oh,
because that seems to be the root cause of a lot of their problems.
Oh, I think you missed our new Lord and Savior, Zakaria's performance on Wednesday.
Yeah, Zakaria.
Zakaria's the answer to all the problems, baby. Look at that guy. It was like watching peak Yaya Toure come back to life and rampage right across the midfield in a blue kit. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, against Dynamo, but we'll temper expectations a little bit. No, I have kind of wondered where Zakaria was because there was just such a glaring hole. I'm also, oh my God, I hate to do this to you. This is not, and I'm going to tell you right now, this is not just a personal attack. I'm not sure Conor Gallagher is all that good.
Oh my, whoa. You don't value your roof. You have lightning insurance because you're about to be smote, sir.
I think it's gotten to a point. Now look, is Conor Gallagher a Premier League level player? I believe so. Like, I think he'd be good. I don't know if he's good enough to be playing and a lock in a starting 11 for a team that is Chelsea's aspirations, is what I'll put it as. I'm not saying it one way or the other, like definitively. I'm just saying I'm having more questions about it now. And I think that's part of the issue, is why I would rather see someone like a Zakaria in there, because he does a thing that they desperately need. They need a guy in midfield to win the ball back. I think that's been a root cause of the problem, but I will let you go. I'm sorry for insulting
your
words.
It's okay. It's your life. I mean, risk it as you want. I think what you just said there is at the heart of some of my frustration, that he's not a locked-on starter in 11 to match Chelsea's ambition. Given the injuries they have right now, I think that might be true of 11 guys.
That's true.
Like, besides Reece James and, you know, Conte when healthy, which is now his legal name, I'm not sure any of the guys, and maybe Mason Mount, are like, oh my goodness, for a team that, like, views itself as one of the biggest clubs in the world and thinks it can win the Champions League every year. Well, they're first on the team sheet. I just don't know if any of them are, and I don't think it's just down to Conagher. And I would say Conagher. That's a nice name.
Conagher.
Yeah, if he dates himself.
Virginia's out. It's Conagher.
It's Conagher. It's Bennifer when he's just with himself. So Conagher was actually one of the few bright spots against Brighton, like with his movement, with his activity in the box. And like, I would take his own ambition against like watching Aubameyang kind of mope around, or watch Sterling like sail another one over the bar, or, you know, make the wrong run or anything like that. Like, I know these guys can find the right form, and I actually do think that they are all potentially world-class players. We just haven't seen it yet. We have not seen consistent performances out of any of the 11 outside of Reece James, who is not even playing in 2022-2023, to match Chelsea's ambition at all.
Yeah, and that's why I'm taking Arsenal moneyline. So just so you know, I'm not, again, this is not a personal thing. You're my guy. I love you, man. But I have so little faith in anything Chelsea's doing right now. I know they had a nice win midweek. They're playing a very weak opponent, but Arsenal, for me, the Premier League right now, and we can go into this another week, it's City, it's Arsenal, and it's Newcastle.
It's Newcastle.
Probably.
Yeah. We're going to spend a good 15 minutes on Newcastle next week, but you and I both agree it's Newcastle.
Yeah. And so I just, right now, Arsenal has things clicking. They've played well. They haven't had that Arsenal letdown stretch that I think both of you and I, or I don't know, maybe we're like secretly rooting for because we're dicks, but like also just kind of what we were expecting. We didn't know if this was sustainable each week that it goes on, each week that they take care of business, it's looking more and more sustainable for them. So, I mean, that Arsenal money line looks too good. And at the same token, they have given up a lot of good chances against good teams. Their style, I think, has suffocated the minnows of the Premier League. But when they've played like United, they've given up chances. I mean, obviously, when you play any good team with good attackers with a kind of high pressing possession style that they play, the downside is they get through, it's going to be really big chances. So they do a good job of suppressing shots, but when they do allow shots on goal, they're big chances. So the over of 3.5 goals was +225. I don't trust the Chelsea airtight defense that I thought was coming back has not. Arsenal is going to score multiple goals. Chelsea might also do the same. I really like that number.
Yeah, I like that number too. It's a sub bet of my prop, but let me get to my game prediction first. I'm also taking Arsenal money line. Like this is business. This isn't personal.
This is big of you. Yeah, this is big of you.
You're not insulting me. I mean, you've got to be true to the numbers and true to the people and tell them what you actually think. So please don't ever take Chelsea just to kind of placate me, but
I would never placate you, trust me. I just want you to know it's not personal that I'm taking against you.
So what I will say, Arsenal, this game is very interesting to me because Arsenal, as I'm currently watching them, is both an indictment and a point of hope for Chelsea, because I just think they're a different stage of a retooling or rebuilding process. Like, you take Arsenal last year and Saka wasn't performing as well. Martinelli wasn't performing as well. Odegaard, Xhaka, Partey. And then they obviously added Jesus, and that made a big difference to the team. But they all were young guys who were getting in big minutes together and eventually coalesced and found a way to play together. And they took huge step forwards in the first 10 matches this year. I don't want to think that we're Arsenal from last season, because Arsenal's playing on Thursday nights, not Tuesday and Wednesday nights. Like, we'll be in Europa if we're at that stage of our rebuild, and that's not something I want to go back to. I've got that Champions League, taste now. I don't want to go back to that farmers.
You want to go to the Thursday afternoon matches?
Exactly.
You want to stay on Monday and Tuesday?
Yeah.
Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah, I want to keep that prime lights going. But the fact that they are doing it makes me think that Chelsea's players are, for the most part, they're critical guys that they're buying. Forget Aubameyang, and to a certain extent, Koulibaly. Like the Fofanas, the Conor Gallaghers. I mean, Pooley's still even young. Mount is still young. Reece James is the linchpin of that team for the next decade. That they can, come together in this year, find their form, and then, be top of the table next year. So as much as I hate to say that Arsenal's going to beat them, and I don't want to be Arsenal from last year, they're at least giving me hope that the long-term prospects for the world-class players we have has a bright future.
Yeah, I mean, and a big part of soccer development that we found out is, like, young guys need to get minutes, and they need to get minutes at high leagues. And, as much as we make fun of Lampard on this podcast for his managerial things, he kind of started the ball with some of these guys by playing them a ton when they were under the transfer embargo. And, Mount's regression is really weird to me. We came in and his numbers look so good, and it seemed, and again, development is always linear in soccer. There's something inside me that says that is not what this is going to turn out to be for him, because he was verging on legitimate superstar. And I think some of those things will start sorting themselves out. Some of these guys may not work out. Pulisic may be end up playing for another team. Same with Havertz or something like that. But some of these guys, when they get these minutes over the course of this year, it'll benefit in future seasons. And I think you're absolutely right. But right now, it's all Arsenal, baby.
Yeah, no, Havertz is the one that really hurts, because he's so young and so talented, and he's going to be so good at Bayern, it's going to kill me. It's going to be Thomas Mueller 2.0, and he's just a guy like wandering around the box for us. But I still need to get my prop bet that we can move on to the next game. In my head, Arsenal and Chelsea games are frequently goal fest, so I agree with your 3.5. And that +225 number is really nice, and I might even take that over my own. But I went for fun. I went for a fun bet. And I think that
this, like fun.
Yeah, fun's, and I good. Think that this gives you value over just taking the 2.5 line. So adjusting up to 3.5 is great, but this is a fun way if you like the 2.5. I'm taking both to score, no draw, at +155. So Chelsea's defense is clearly in tatters right now due to that combination of injuries and overused players and tactics. That 3-5-2 with Sterling and Pooley as wingbacks. That ain't it, folks. Especially when we have no defensive cover for them, as Brighton made very clear last Saturday. So I hope that one is dead and buried. And they've also struggled with their finishing, but I think they find a way to get out on the score sheet just once, because they are creating chances. They are absolutely creating chances. Regression comes for everybody but Messi. I think they're going to find a way to put one in the back of the net. And I think Arsenal's going to bury at least two. So I think once Chelsea puts one down and Arsenal puts one down, they just get to kick back as a neutral and have a ton of fun, not caring where the next goal comes from. So take this at +155 to supercharge your Sunday morning.
Love it.
All right. Love it. We got two left in the 5-pint, and we only got about 15 minutes to do it. So let's hammer these out, Brett. We're going to head over to Man City, second at 29 points versus Fulham, seventh at 19 points. Game is Saturday at 11 a.m. Caesars has City at -850, and that second versus seven in the table is still -850. I did not misspeak. Fulham is +1900. Draw is +750. Man City -2.5 goals is -110. Fulham is -120. So, Brett, my question for you to lead off this game is, did the Leicester game last week show us that Man City is actually fallible if Haaland can't lace them up? Or are they still inevitable as long as KDB is out there?
Still inevitable. I mean, they turn right around and absolutely whack Sevilla midweek. And Haaland's replacement, Julian Alvarez, had, I think, a goal and two assists. So this is just the Pep machine, man. It's the part of the frustrating part about this. It's like, you take a guy that is on pace to shatter every goal scoring record that ever existed, for the most part, that Messi doesn't own. And then he's out of the lineup, and then they go ahead and they just rip off two wins. They get back to it. I mean, it's part of the thing too with Haaland is he obviously was doing the important things, putting the ball in the back of the net. He's great at it. We know this, we covered this already. But when you make a swap like him for a more technical player like Alvarez, like City get back to more where they were pre-Haaland, which is like they're going to score once or twice, but then they're also going to keep hold of the ball and they're never going to let it out of the attacking third. And that's kind of like the difference. So it's just like looking at a different version of City, I think. That said, Fulham's sneaky bad. So that -2.5 without Haaland, it seems like it's kind of like a fool's bet, but I still think that's where the value is to me. I don't know about you, but that
I thought you were calling me a fool because I'm taking it too. I mean, before I take Fulham, before I light my money on fire, because I feel like taking anything against Manchester City is that way, just for one second, I did want to talk about KDB just a touch more. I just love him. I love him so much. In fact, like, I assume Superman dressed up as Kevin De Bruyne for Halloween. He is so freaking good, Brett. Like, forget the free kick that rescued them. Forget the free kick that was absolutely sublime, up and over the wall, U90, off the bar. Like, you can't make a more perfect free kick, and it won them the game last week. Did you? And I don't even know if you noticed this, but it's just like the little joys that I take in watching him. That long cross that came to him when he was like deep in the box over near the touchline. And he reaches back with his toe and flicks it with his toe, perfectly weighted backwards into the like path of an on-rushing attacker to free him up for a free strike at the goalie. Like, that's like watching Picasso paint. It's so incredible. It's so incredible to watch. So like, I know we might be changing my tune in a couple years when Haaland owns every goal scoring record that ever existed, but KDB is my favorite non-Chelsea player to watch over the last few years in the Premier League. If you're creating a Mount Rushmore for non-Chelsea guys that I tune in for week in, week out, chisel his face first. I cannot believe that I get the pleasure of watching that guy play.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing I always think of too is like, obviously these guys are incredible athletes. Like, they're at a very high peak in their profession, even the ones like Danny Ward that we make fun of. But like, I look at some of those like curling through balls that he puts perfectly in the path of defender, and I sit there and I'm like, if you gave me 100 tries from like 30 yards closer, with my hands,
yeah,
I couldn't even put that ball there.
I'll take it one step farther. I couldn't draw it on a piece of paper. Like the arc of the ball and the run that comes in, like forget even being able to do it. I could never even diagram it.
Yeah, it is incredible. And there is something about the, like, Haaland's goal scoring is kind of like this brute force, like thing that's, it's impressive and you're awed by it. But like the artistry of some of the, like the great passers in soccer, like that's, and that's what KDB is. You know, the Cancelo passes that we've fawned over on this podcast as well fall into that category. But like, they are, it's just something about it. It literally is just, it's art. Like that's, you can tell me about the physics of the spin and everything and how he plays it and the technique he needs to do it. I don't care, man. It's like you said, it's like staring at a Picasso. Like that's art.
Yeah. And I unfortunately, you know, lack the time to watch all the other leagues around the world. And maybe there's other KDBs running around doing this in the Bundesliga or La Liga or anything else, but like,
not in the Bundesliga.
He's essentially like one of one to me. Like, I'm so thankful he plays in the Premier League, so I get to watch him so much. And if there are other guys that are doing anything remotely like this, like hit me to it, educate it to me, because I don't like, I can't get enough of it. I can't get enough of the sheer magnitude of creativity, skill, precision, and yes, artistry that he displays. And so it's incredible. But as for the game, I don't know if City's going to risk Haaland or not. Like, that's a really interesting question.
It feels like they're just going to get through these matches until he's got his World Cup break and then make sure they're safe.
Yeah, they're a minus 850 favorite, like, and they have all these other options that you laid out. Do they really need to risk him? And plus, if I was them, because, I mean, obviously we think they're so incredible, I'd be going for the quadruple, and they'd have to play Chelsea in the League Cup midweek. And if you want to, like, send them out then, send them out then. So if they're not going to play Haaland, like, you're a little more impressed with, like, the Alvarez and Grealish's world of the world than I am. Obviously, if Foden, I'm 100% on board with, but that front line doesn't really do it for me. So if they're going to play those types of guys, I'm less scared to think that they're going to win by three or more. And I'm happy to take the minus 120 that a full team that might be sneaky bad, but hasn't actually lost by more than two goals to any of the big six this year. They stayed within one of Tottenham, one of Arsenal. They drew Liverpool, and the only team to break them out is the darling of our eyes, Newcastle, which we'll get to next week. But they have some way of staying in these games, and without Haaland, I like them. I like the value of them doing it again this week.
Well, I'm kind of hedging my City scores lots of goals with my kind of analysis of the way things change. And I'm going back to an old favorite here, Toby. And you know what this is? It's the good team to do a good thing. My City clean sheet bet, they are only minus 111 for a clean sheet win. That feels pretty good to me.
All right,
bro. I like that bet.
I'm gonna see if I can put you in a prop bet today. So what if I told you there was a way to take the same bet, but instead of that minus number, I can get you plus 430.
I would like that. Emma, Professor Toby, put your little hat on and get to the chalkboard, please.
Manchester City to win and under 2.5 goals is on Caesars at plus 430. So I'm obviously not crazy enough to think that Fulham are going to win, but I like Fulham to stay within the under the three goals. And so naturally, 1-0 or 2-0 would be good score lines for them to win by. And instead of getting even money on something like that, you get all the way up to plus 430 by combining the two. So I think the four most likely score lines in my mind, particularly if Haaland doesn't play, is 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, and 3-1. So getting 430 for half of, you know, 95% outcomes in my point of view seems like excellent, excellent value.
I'm not even going to actually that one, Toby.
Oh, good job. Oh, wow. The ultimate compliment. He's impressed for once, folks. You got to back that bet now. I wasn't going to put in my 5-point. But Brett, you know what? Now I actually am. All right. One quick break, and then we'll do our last game, the 5-pint, and get you all out of here. Final game of the week, folks. Aston Villa, 16th at 12 points. Manchester United, 5th at 23 points. Sunday at 9 a.m. Manchester United is plus 102. Villa is plus 255. The draw is plus 250. Aston Villa minus half a goal is plus 100. Villa is minus 130. All right, Brett, Aston Villa have a new manager. Tell our listeners what they should expect from Unai Emery.
With our boy Unai here, it's going to be it's going to be more of the same. I think with Villa, a lot of their problems were structural with in terms of their personnel. Like they just don't have good attackers. You know, Emery was kind of, I think he shot a little too far for the stars going for a power club like Arsenal. I do think if he's going to succeed, it's going to be at a mid-table club like Villa. You know, what he did with Villarreal last year was commendable. Like they had a ton of injuries. They made a great Champions League run. It's really cool for the city. Their underlying numbers in La Liga were actually really, really good. He turned Dan Yuma, who is like a former Bournemouth like afterthought, into one of La Liga's best attackers. And I think he kind of got out the right time that Villarreal side was kind of aging the wrong direction. I'm curious to see how he structures Villa. He set up and had all the success basically in this 4-4-2 that, you know, I mean, soccer formations now, they start in a certain formation and defensively, and then they press one way and they get in possession another way. So it's all over the place. But I would like to see how he structures this team. I would like to see if Coutinho has anything left. They're going to play like kind of a weird combination of they're going to be a little bit more passive without the ball, but then they're going to try to play out of the back out of a 4-4-2, which is like the exact opposite of what you'd expect from that formation. There is the whole thing, you know, maybe he brings a little new manager bump and Bill's got a little bit of life and they are home, but with Casemiro in the lineup, United's been really good and they're +108 on Caesars. I'm with United. And I'm also going to go with the fact that Bill's attackers still suck and Emery can't change that. So +195 for a United clean sheet kind of feels like it saves you against the draw if it's a 0-0 draw. So those are kind of my two for this one.
All right. Well, to me, it's like Jack Parkman said to Wild Thing in Major League Two, new haircut, same dead arm.
Major League Two quotes.
Oh, whoa. Hell yeah. The boys last week, Major League Two this week. New haircut.
Those are not the same thing. Boys is a Pantheon TV show at this point. Major League Two, I don't know about that. We're in the same conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to give it a third time to see if I can actually get it out without you interrupting me. New haircut, same dead arm. Thank you, Brett. As much as I made fun of CVG, I'm not convinced he was the problem, and Emery still has the same underperforming squad at his disposal. Coutinho has been much worse form this year than he was last year, and he doesn't have teammates talent enough to pick up any of that slack. Plus, Manchester United started Maguire and Ronaldo against West Ham and somehow still won. So it feels disrespectful to keep United at a plus number against an Aston Villa team that Emery should be applauded just for keeping them out of relegation. I'm with you. I saw them at +102 last night. It sounds like they're up to +108 now. So get that number over at Caesars. And I'm taking somewhat of a similar bet to you because I just don't think Aston Villa could score. But just in case they do, it's not like I'm over the moon about Manchester United either. Both teams to score, no, +110. You already know what I think of Aston Villa, so that can't be a shock. But here's an interesting stat for you. Villa has in the last seven Villa matches, one of the two teams has gone scoreless six of the seven times. And in the last Manchester United six matches, five times this bet has hit. So you put it together, five of the last six are Manchester United, six of the last seven for Aston Villa, and it seems crazy to get plus money. Taking it at +110.
Yeah, I mean, these are two teams that I think are very underwhelming going towards the opposing goal. So I think those are really anything that has to do with goals not being scored in this match sounds good.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what sounds less good, which is this stupid five-pipe pickoff, which I lost last month in embarrassing fashion to you. Mentioned it at the top of the show. You crushed me in October. Congrats to you, pal. Very well done. Let me know what suds you want. They're coming your way. November, though, it's a new month, new contest. And this is going to be a weird one since it's going to be a mix of the Premier League and World Cup. That's universally true across the football world. Certainly isn't exclusive to our dumb little contest. So let's get it started, Brett. I am going with Tottenham to score first half, no, at -135 for a pint. Liverpool to win, +113 for a pint. United, Aston Villa, both to score, no, is +110. We're going to do that for a pint. And then Manchester City to win and under 2.5 goals. Because of your love and embrace of that pick, we're going to do that at +430. We're going to add that one in there and really go after it. And finally, Arsenal on the money line, +180 against my beloved Chelsea for my final pint. And Brett, before you give yours, I'm pulling out all the stops this month. I'm pulling out all the stops, all the dirty tricks.
Oh, you got a dog for good luck.
I'm going to make you stare at this Dogba. Nickname Didier Dogba and try to give me your picks. Try to give me your picks looking at this.
Oh, my God. That dog is adorable. Oh, Didier Dogba, come hang out with me, man.
All defenders all right. to score. Come on. No, you want to do
I'm
it.
I'm going to feel bad. Now I'm going to just pick all losers because I just feel bad.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
This is psychological manipulation. I'm going to go with City -2.5 at -110. I'm going to do the United clean sheet at +195. I got Arsenal money line, same as you. So I guess we're just going to copy you here instead. This dog is distracting me. I can't even look at my notes. I can't even look at my notes and my dog on the screen.
Succumb. November's my month.
This is so unfair. I'm going to go bring a bunch of puppies from a pound in here or something. All right. I got Chelsea Arsenal over at 3.5 goals. And then Liverpool to win both to score +275 is my last one. So keeping it sort of basic, relying on good teams to do good things for the most part. And totally distracted by this dog. Didier Dogba, you are one cute little pup.
Well, if Chelsea bounce back, and I start beating you in the five pint, I might end up like Cruella DeVille. I might just have 101 of these in my house because I got to get one month after month in order to keep
basically
up.
We're going to have a third podcast host. That's what's going to happen.
She probably did better picks than me if I just put her paw on the screen.
I'm going to be sitting there going, hey, little puppy. You're going to be like, Brett, tell me about the game.
All right, everybody. I hope you enjoy this great weekend of Premier League action that we are about to have. And for myself, for Brett Corominas and Didier Dogba here, we will see you next week where we'll be back with our usual interchange of horrible advice backed by expert analysis. Take care, folks.